if you try to get out of the earth realm, you get too caught up in the astral realm. You get too caught up in the UFOs and the UAPs and the divine consciousness and the mystical realities and the transcendent outside of time super intelligence that we are all part of, then you're basically skipping school. You know what I mean? So the idea is to allow the two things to coexist in any given life. And it's this wonderful pairing, actually. It's a wonderful pairing. The tension between the two is the tension of the crucifixion.
Yeah, it's the duality of being.
Yes, and it's uncomfortable, and it hurts, and it's painful, because yet on one side, your soul, you are perfect, you're made of love, you are never going to die, you are never born, you are an eternal, beautiful expression of infinity. But on the other side, you're made of atoms. You've got a liver, you've got intestines, you've got a mouth, and fucking hair falls out, and the two things are existing together.
Yeah.
And so to me, that's the crucifixion. That's what the crucifixion is all about, is that we are being crucified, and that the answer to the problem is surrender. And the crucifixion, you know, Jesus says, into your hands I commend my spirit. You know, you let go. You let go. And then in that moment, you get what, you know, Christian enlightenment, which is pure surrender, pure communion with simultaneously the earth realm. And the reaction to the earth realm as it's torturing this person to death is, I love you. You don't know what you're doing.
Right.
I love you. And that's really beautiful. And then the reaction to the heaven realm or the sky realm is, I give myself to you. I give my spirit to you. And wow, those two things are really a great, I think, method for dealing with the infuriating experience of being a human.
Yeah, these are powerful, powerful visualizations and ways to see it, because it's not even just some kind of ethereal pie in the sky type of metaphor, because it does apply to your life, and it does apply to the duality of being this animal vehicle with very complex emotional depth, almost like going through life holding on to this little candle, like, you know, my God, there's a lot of darkness around me. There's a lot of darkness around me. Come on, we'll keep this candle going and get brighter and brighter. But the duality of this existence is that if you really are the light, if you really are this eternal, infinite light consciousness, then the only way that you can truly experience that is by being surrounded by darkness.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, this is why, of you know, again, like, I don't like calling myself a Buddhist, because I think it's more of a system. It's like saying I'm someone who does like sporadic abdominal exercises or something. But but you know, I do think if you're looking for a wonderful framework within which to sort of understand your psychedelic experience, Christianity is fantastic, because it's meant to be explored it more than just the surface level. I mean, even the crucifix itself, you know, if you take a cube and you unfold a cube, you get a crucifix, and the cube is apparently representative of the like pre-Big Bang conditions, the sort of the, you know, totality of everything. And you unfold that, and suddenly you have this map, one, you know, of time, space, past, present, and future, a timeline, and another line running through that, which represents the infinite. So built into what can seem like annoying baby stories is this fractal, like compressed data set that is incredibly psychedelic, especially when you go back to the original Greek or the Aramaic.
Yeah, like the Hermetic principles and things like that.
Then suddenly it's like math. Now you're looking at equations or something. But the Book of John, you know, you have the Matthew, Mark, Luke. These are known as the Synoptic Gospels, because within them they have mostly the same stories. And then the Book of John, you have this like, what the fuck is this shit? Like, you have this, things completely different. In the Synoptic Gospels, you have this emphasis on something that has always confused me. Jesus's blood, like, is what saves the world. It redeems the sin of the world. And for my Christians out there, you know, I am a buffoon and I maybe just don't understand it, but the Book of John, it doesn't really emphasize that, but rather the crucifixion itself represented the ultimate victory. The sort of game of chicken between power and violence and love. Someone was supposed to flinch, right? Like Jesus was supposed to call down angels cry uncle or say, fuck, I was wrong, but didn't and let them kill him. And so that is considered to be the ultimate, like, benevolent fuck you to the demiurge or whatever call the embodiment of that power structure. So, yeah, man, I think that if you sort of begin to, like, use some of these lineages in your own way, trusting your own mind, diving into them as much as you can, removing all of the obscuration caused by whatever particular lineage of Christianity or whatever your religion you were raised in has put on the windshield of your perception, and just visit it as though you'd never even heard of it before, suddenly you realize that this seems to be one of the taps on the pipe to the cave-in, that you realize, like, holy shit, this shit was intentionally encoded, not because it was trying to be cagey, but because it knew that if it said everything out front, it would get censored. So it fucking codes the shit out of it to the point where kings and powerful people adopt it as their religion, not even knowing that by spreading the Bibles out, they're giving people, like, a roadmap to, like,
enlightenment kind of, or overcoming the human.
And that's genius, and that seems almost like a non-human intelligence to me. That seems so smart, such a smart way to get something under the door of a cosmic prison.
I like that. One of my favorite people that I met, last year I was traveling through Egypt, and one of the guys that was on the group with us was the Grand Master of the Knights Templar, a guy called Timothy Hogan. Yeah, wow. Very, very interesting guy. I've had him on the podcast before. He's a great guy, really interesting, and he knows his shit when it comes to, you know, ancient mystery schools and the Hermetic teachings and all of the types of codexes and information that's been hidden within, you know, architecture and theological writings and all of it. Is fascinating when you get someone like that who really sees the patterns that you're just talking about, this kind of codex that's been imprinted into what people think is just, you know, basic text or basic scripture or symbology, because obviously symbology is the language of religion. So much meaning is hidden within the symbols and the architecture of cathedrals, the sacred geometric structures, the resonance, the way in which the chorus will resonate, the hymns in this type of building. It's all, you know, underneath, I think what it is underneath what we have now is kind of like a very surface level understanding of what these things were trying to say. If you take it all the way back to its conception, this is the science of consciousness. This is something we've lost. We've gained our physics and our technology and all of these very impressive analytical ways of, like, deriving meaning from matter. But we've lost a very sophisticated consciousness of science that I think was present in Egypt. It was present before then and in Atlantis, you know. And I think that this is maybe where we're coming back to. I told you last time about my whole kind of idea of techno shamanism, that we were shamanistic, then we're technical. Maybe these things are coming together, spirit and science melding together, and maybe we'll start to recover a lot of this lost information. One of the things that Timothy told me about, which was just fascinating, I think it was either an electron or a photon, but whichever one it was, when you superimpose a photon or an electron, you bring it up to, like, maximum magnification, it's the Templar cross.
Wow,
it's literally the same arcing cross, Templar cross. So it's just like you said, it's like scientific principles about the energetic structure of reality are just hidden in plain sight in symbols, in scripture, in codes.
Everything. And
it's like a game. It's like a massive video game.
It is. And to me, what is implicit in everything you just said is consent.
Right.
Within the game, it's built in that if you don't want to know, you don't have to know.
You don't have to know.
All you have to do is nothing. You just accept what the world tells you, and you live your life as you think the world is, according to whoever the particular propagandists are in whatever time frame you were born into, and you can live this kind of undisturbed life, maybe a little bit of despair in there, maybe a kind of ache inside of you, like a sense that, like, I feel like there could be more here. It's a little bit like the way I used to play video games. I would try to win the game, and I would go online, look up solutions to the puzzles. What the fuck was I doing? Like, what's the point of the game?
I did
game
that too, bro. Like, I did that too.
What? You're not playing. Just watch a movie. Like, what are you doing? It's so sad. But now when I'm playing games, I really try, unless I've like been stuck for too mm-hmm. long and it sucks, to not to work it out myself. And I think that you see a similar, less idiotic thing happening in this particular human incarnation, which is, look, there is so much right in front of you that you don't need to. If you can summon a UFO, do it. But
you don't have to.
You don't have to do that. You are the simultaneously the laboratory or the magical chamber and the magus. You are simultaneously the alchemist and the cauldron.
Yeah.
You are both of these things working together, meaning that you have, or you're sitting on, I'm assuming you're sitting down, exactly everything you need to see the truth of reality, which is never going to be the reality that you see on an Ozempic commercial. It's never going to be the reality portrayed by people who need you to buy shit, who need you to buy their shit, because it sort of negates a lot of the desire that fuels capitalism. It mm-hmm. negates a lot of that stuff that allows the economy to function. And so that it's antithetical and to, or rather it's an enemy of that way of being. And so it will be concealed, it will be hidden, it will be warped, it will be twisted. It will always be something that if you let someone else tell you what it is, you'll never see it for yourself. That's why I always go back to as above, so below.
Yeah.
And I try to pull the tendrils of my consciousness back into my life as it is right now, instead of, like, you know, it's like, is the consciousness of humanity shifting? Well, I have to ask, is my consciousness shifting? You know?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is there a shift towards love in the universe? Well, is there a shift towards love in my own life? Is, you know, and if there isn't, then it's going to be hard for me to then say, well, it must be out there somewhere. Because if it's not happening to me, well, I'm just like everybody else. So it's probably not happening. But if it is, if I am noticing in my own identity something, a shift, if I am seeing like, oh, fuck, I think I'm like getting less angry. I think I'm not succumbing instantaneously to explosive rage when things don't go my way. I think they're, then I could say for sure it's happening to me. And if it's happening to me, I'm going to guess it's happening to a lot of fucking people, because I am a real slow learner. And you know what I mean? Like, I can never even do a ollie on a skateboard. So
me neither.
So I think it is, there is a shift in consciousness happening. And I think that your experience and the experience is being reported by countless people and in the intelligence community and out of the intelligence community are a testament to that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I mean, I get that sense, and I like the way that you kind of postured it, where it's, well, do I feel like I'm transforming? Do I feel like I'm changing? Then yeah, maybe the world is changing, because ultimately the world is your perception of it, right? I mean, you know, as each individual person, we all have our own individual realities that we bump into each other in, but we still have our own little bubble. So is your bubble changing, or are you feeling the need for your bubble to change in some way? And I've definitely felt that over the last few years, you know, I've felt that.
That is so insightful. That is so insightful that you pointed that out, because I'm so glad you did, because right now, whoever's listening, you might be like a festering asshole. Like, you might be like just as selfish as can be. You might be like a few bad choices away from literally imploding into like a black hole and sucking the entire planet into your vortex of selfishness. But if you're experiencing that tug, that feeling, that tug, then you are so lucky. Because, you know, one of the things that I've been told is the longing is the grace. That in fact, that experience of longing for the transcendent is the transcendent too. It's in there. Like that is the conduit through which you are connecting to the transcendent in the experience of, like, it kind of feels like wanting to go home.
Yeah.
Homesickness. I want to go home. I want to see my mom. What is this place? I gotta go. I gotta get home. That feeling, that is a sacred feeling. That's a very holy.
And it's your choice how you respond to it. Like we were saying about freedom of choice. It's you know, if you're getting those feelings in your life, you can still push them down and ignore them if you want. I mean, hey, look, it might give you a bit of a bumpy trajectory if you're genuinely ignoring intuitive feelings of, oh, I need to change this, or this needs to, you know, evolve in some way. You can make that choice. But I also get the sense that, at least from my own experiences, because there have been so many times in my life where it's like, yeah, I know I need to do something, or I know I need to do that. Yeah, I'll get around to it, and I never do. And then life just fucking just hits you, you know, just hits you with like a situation that sweeps the rug from under you, and you're like, oh my God, everything's falling apart. Then you start trying to build it back together, and you realize that you've actually grown stronger from that, and you've taken on board that strength you needed, that you knew you needed, but you weren't ready to fully make that step yourself. Life kind of seems to go, all right, here's a little bit of a jumble. We're going to jumble you
summer
up a little
school,
bit.
Bitch. Uh-huh, you're going to summer school. You got to catch up on algebra, motherfucker.
Right. You're going to learn this lesson, dude. You're going to learn this lesson. But, you know, it is a conscious act. And I think belief and intention are so powerful in this regard, because, you know, it feels like we have, over time, through various rituals and incantations, almost figured out ways to manipulate the algorithm, so to speak, to kind of influence the fabric of life. But I'm not so sure that it's like the specific incantation or the incense or the bones being cast or the drawing of a pentagram. It's your belief in these things. It's your belief in the symbols, the ritual, the words. Yeah. Ultimately, it's your belief in the intended outcome, right, that causes an effect to take place. And I've said it before, if I'd been led not towards attempting to commune with ETs through sending conscious messages, but had instead been drawn towards, I don't know, like the use of a Ouija board, it probably still would have worked, because the belief was there. Yes. And I think it's the belief that actually has the primary effect.
I it's like, look, don't get the car that drives you to the beach confused with the beach. And I think that's a lot of people don't, there's a lot of ways to get to the beach. You can hitchhike, you can get a motorcycle, one of those dumb scooters, nice car, Ferrari, but it doesn't matter. You're just trying to get to the beach. So I agree with you. I think that, like, if you get too caught up in the vehicle and then you get really like confused and start thinking there's just one vehicle to get to the beach, then you probably are going to miss a lot of trips to the beach, because you're going to be like, no, I only go to the beach in my Mercedes. I don't go to the beach on a bicycle. I don't go, you know, this is like the trap of the method. You know, the method can become a sand trap, where you get stuck in the method. And then you don't, and then what's really funny about that is a lot of people who engage in this sort of thing, they haven't really thought it all the way through. So when it starts working, they retreat from that back into the method. It's like, it's exactly what I do when I have writer's block or when I can't come up with an intro for the podcast, is I know I'm fucked when I'm like downloading plug-in for my synths. Like, you know, like that's not going to help. Fucking is not going to help, you know? And I think that's kind of what you're talking about there. And then the belief and you know, because we're told over and over again how many people live on the planet, and because there does seem to be an implicit message of the irrelevance of the individual, the power of the individual, the potency of human incarnation in the individual, people stop trusting the sense that they have that, wow, I feel like if I wanted to, I could change a lot in my own life in the world. Right. And then you're like, that's just messianic bullshit. I'm getting too egotistical. I'm just one of zillions of people, a useless blobby piece of shit. I don't have any real power. And if there were forces or powers and principalities that were engaged in actively making you blind to your true potency, then you would expect there to be a never-ending kind of messaging going out. Not just like, you suck, they're not going to say it overtly, but just more like, you're kind of unimportant, you don't really matter. Well, if I don't matter, why the fuck are you constantly trying to hypnotize me with your programming?